I shall hand over to Laura. Okay, so thank you ever so much to everybody for coming today. I'm going to talk a little bit about my work, just to kind of contextualise the work that you see here. And then I'm going to talk about the process that I went through when I was doing the research for this body of work about Walsall that I was commissioned to make here. So first of all, I suppose the thing to say is that central to my practice is the walk, or something that I would talk about in terms of the dérive or the drift. And this relates to an idea of psychogeography, which some of you will be aware of as a practice. And it's something that I've adopted in my own work, and it relates to the way that I relate to the urban environment through my walks around it, so that my walks become not just a sense of part of an aesthetic practice, but almost like a kind of psychic interrogation of a landscape, with the ultimate aim being that the work becomes a sort of radical critique of urbanism as well. So what happens is I go out on walks, and I won't necessarily have a very clear idea about where I'm going to go. It's quite spontaneous and it's quite intuitive. So I embark on walks and I have a vague idea of where I want to go. And then I make notes, very, very kind of short, very precise notes about the way that I relate to that environment on a very subjective, almost a sort of poetic level, really. So I write down fragments of overheard conversation. I make notes about how a certain place might make me feel. I make notes about details of sort of texture of places, the kind of fabric of the architecture, so that I can conjure up a much more vivid feeling about a place when I get back to my studio. And I also take photographs. Quite often I just make very quick kind of utilitarian snaps with my phone, just to kind of record something in a very prosaic kind of way. And then I go back to the studio and I'll spend a long time. For example, something like these would take quite a few weeks to construct. And there's a point, I guess, to the sort of laboriousness and the meticulousness of the rendering of these works. And it's something that I've thought about a lot. And I think the point for me is it's about, the work's about bearing witness, in a sense, or almost chronicling a disappearing or a rapidly changing landscape. And by making the work in this way, I immerse myself in that place. I actually locate myself in it, you know, for a protracted period and a very intense kind of period. And by getting every tiny little detail, I feel like I've absolutely positioned myself on a very kind of intimate level with that landscape. Something that happens a lot with my work is that it becomes, like I said, almost like a chronicle or a document of a changing landscape. And this is something that seems to be a recurring motif in my work. A lot of my work in London has become a strident critique of so-called urban regeneration schemes that I would really describe as processes of class cleansing, of social cleansing. A lot of communities, a lot of estates destroyed, people displaced to make way for a very kind of ferocious form of colonialism in the form of private property development in the southeast. And when I came to the West Midlands to make this work, I found that a lot of the places that I was drawn to were the kind of liminal zones that were being encroached upon for the same kind of development that I'd seen in London and across the rest of the country. That leads me to talk about those liminal zones as well. I mean, you can see from the work that I've made here these are, you know, I guess what could be called, described as liminal spaces, places that kind of exist on boundaries, or places that don't have a kind of clearly defined sense of, you know, in terms of how one would map it, you know, it's they're kind of like more vague places. And these are places that I find that I'm increasingly drawn to, because they're those kind of unpoliced spaces, those hidden zones, those places where you sort of sense that you can occupy and take temporary ownership of them. Certainly in urban environments, having spaces like this form a respite and an escape from the relentless bombardment of images, advertising images, pressure to consume, leisure activity as consumption and so on. So these kind of places I associate with scenes or situations that operate outside of that, or operate outside normal temporal zones within capitalism as well. Where you see the sort of flare-ups of these fluorescent colours, I mean, that's something people I know have been asking a lot about. And that, to me, is a way of articulating that moment of euphoria, or a very fleeting moment of some sort of transformative moment. I thought about it as well in terms of epiphany as well, that idea of you get certain moments where everything seems to gel and coalesce, and then as soon as you're able to rationalise it or articulate it in those terms, that moment has passed. And so I kind of filter those experiences through, or that idea through my experiences of being involved in punk and rave cultures. So there is a sort of narcotic lens as well that this work is kind of pushed through. And I think walking can activate certain currents, certain sort of buried or hidden currents that are in the landscape. Almost like, you know, that idea of like traces of LSD being stored in fat cells, and then you lose weight and then you sort of get flashbacks again as these things are released back. In a way, I think walking a landscape can do that as well. So yeah, in a way, that's what these moments are about, where you just get these sudden points of intensity with the colour, where and here as well, it's more, I think, more obvious as well with the way that I've put the graffiti with the dates actually on the surface of the drawing. And that's quite an important thing as well, and that's a recurring theme in my work, putting in these sequences of dates. And that relates very much to this idea of places being stained by or indelibly marked by certain historical moments. And that could be, you know, in a wider sort of socio-political context. So I often talk about economic crises or industrial action, strikes, disputes, those kind of things, where there's a sort of rupture in the normality of a sort of system or a flow. But then equally, I talk about these moments on a very kind of personal level. So the idea of a place being indelibly marked with a certain moment could be a very sort of personal, subjective moment. And this is something that I do in my work, in my drawings and my writing. I actually cut up these moments, so I sort of talk about more general, wider political concerns and refer to theory and philosophy. But then I intersperse those with very kind of personal, almost sort of romantic reflections about a place. And when I was asked to come here to make this work about Walsall, I'd already been here, and I lived in Birmingham briefly 20 years ago, and we used to come up here sometimes to punk gigs, and I was involved in the free party scene and that kind of rave culture, so I was aware of this area, and especially places like this that I've actually made into drawings. So I already felt I had an emotional connection to the place, a sort of affinity with it. And also I was born in West Yorkshire, in Halifax, which is also, you know, has similarities in terms of the, you know, the post-industrial landscape and, you know, the economic and social impact of the decline of industry in an area. So it's felt like West Yorkshire, like this area as well, is, it becomes almost like a spectral city in certain places, you know. You sort of feel the revenants, the ghosts of an industrial past. And that's something that I really wanted to channel in the work. So the research here involved going out on lots of walks around the area over a period of quite a few months. And this was very involved, very kind of focused. So I'd set out on these drifts, which in itself sounds quite sort of amorphous and vague, but my actual focus was very, very sharp. I was very engaged with the landscape, very, you know, receptive to it and wanted to write as much as possible. So I'd come back from the drift and then I'd immediately set about writing, almost in the style of a journal, before I even went back to the studio and made the drawings. And that's the kind of process that I would go through because I'm a writer as well as a visual artist. And I don't privilege one of those over another. For me, they both carry the same weight. So yeah, I would make a series of walks and go off and spend hours at a time drifting around different places. And then I would also go out with other people, people that are from around here that all got a very detailed prior knowledge of the area, and try and absorb different people's stories and ideas and take fragments of all these different elements and try and weave them into the work in some way. So the piece of writing that I made that some of you might have seen in that little zine that I made, that goes with the work, you know, the things kind of go together. Not the drawings illustrating the writing or the writing as an explanation, but both of them operating on the same kind of level in a sense. So the way that I made these small drawings was really a way of trying to articulate that sense of going out on a drift. So those little vignettes or those little moments, those fragments, was quite important to me to try and just isolate certain moments that had particular intensity for me. But to make a series of small drawings, I think, you know, it's quite a good way of articulating that sense of moving around, you know, the drift, experiencing things in a sort of parallaxing around a shifting landscape. And then the drawings over at that side, they're drawings that I've made in London that do relate to this project, but again, that's making reference to the idea of a sort of spectral city, or a city that's become occupied by a revenant or a ghost. The drawing on the right, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it, but that's of the Haygate estate in Elephant and Castle, and I used to live on the neighbouring estate to that. And it's a massive, sprawling, brutalist estate, which has now been completely left depopulated and abandoned. So again, there's this always, for me in my work, this idea of sort of haunted places, you know. And so this idea of coaxing out these hidden narratives and buried currents is very, seems to be a driving force. It seems to be a central thing in the work. And I found...
Could you speak up a little, please?
I'm losing my voice, but it's quite hard because I've built the ceiling so high to sort of project back.
And I can't tell what you're saying.
Do you want to come a bit closer in?
Yeah,
then?
Come a bit closer.
Do you want to come closer in?
From where?
Come closer. It might be more helpful.
So I think I kind of feel like it might be easier now if I open it up to you, to maybe ask questions, and then we can discuss it in response to what people want to say to me, if anyone wants to say anything.
Thank you. In Savage Messiah,
yeah.
You include a number of quotations from various writers.
Yeah.
And others who have influenced you, some of the situations.
I think, I don't know if any other people managed to catch that question. I was just asked about how my work relates to people that I've referred to in my work in quotations. So talking about people like Guy Debord, who was the leader of the Situationist International, and somebody who articulated this idea of psychogeography in sort of radical context in Paris in the 60s. But I do sort of feel like I locate myself in a sort of tradition or a lineage of a sort of avant-garde radical tradition, in the sense that I've been informed by that. I've read all that stuff, and it came to me through punk, actually. That's how I got involved in that. But kind of contemporary uses of the term psychogeography, I've distanced myself from to a certain extent, because it seems to have gone a bit coffee table and a bit kind of anodyne. I'm not naming any names, but I think most people will know who I'm referring to. But I think how I sort of, my work is different on a very, in a very obvious way to a lot of those writers, because I am the only woman in that field, in that genre. So my perspective and my experiences of walking around the city and living in quite precarious housing conditions and all those other things, my relationships with people, it is a different perspective, a different viewpoint, which, yeah. But does that answer the question?
Yes, thank you.
Any other questions?
How would you approach a drift in a place that you didn't have any specific connections with? You've never been before, never lived near it or whatever.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Did I paraphrase the questions, because everyone might
Yeah, and that was just a question about how would I approach this idea of the drift or the derive in a place that I didn't have any prior knowledge of. And I think that's a good question, because the places that I normally work in are places that I do feel I have some kind of emotional relationship with, in the sense of I might have lived there, or I've had intense kind of moments there, spent time there in the past. So I'm drawing on memories and sort of speculations about the future, and fragments of certain biographical detail. But I think it doesn't really sort of take long for me to occupy new territories and start to assimilate and absorb different landscapes. I mean, that is something that I've done, and it's a different kind of experience, and it makes the work, the registers sort of shift slightly. Like, for example, I've got a residency coming up, and I'm going to be going to China for 5 weeks in April, and I've never been there before, and that is going to, I think, really massively affect the work. And I can kind of imagine it moving into a more sort of Ballardian kind of territory. So I'm not sure, but we'll see.
Okay. Anyone else?
I was very interested by the level of detail in the pictures, which you just explained a little bit about, because I think sometimes when you have people doing things, photographs of landscape or picking up images, that's something that doesn't happen. It's often the opposite. So often we lots of snapshots of the place.
Yeah.
And I'm very interested in that intensity, but also how it makes, in case of these two pictures, the perspective, they're very much of a very specific place and very detailed, but the lines, the depth of the pictures, it's almost abstract as well, before it reflects on that.
Yeah.
If you have any thoughts, has that always been your approach? Yeah, because punk is very much the opposite of that, of course.
Yeah, I think there's elements of my, my involvement with punk and various kind of subcultural groups in the way that I make the work with biro and fluorescent acrylic, and use these you know, there's a imbue the work with a certain kind of rawness and energy, I think. But I'm also interested in how a shift of registers in the drawing can completely alter the meaning or the way that something is received. So, for example, I'll make drawings like this that are incredibly time-consuming and laborious and that'll take weeks to make. But then I'll make very quick black and white drawings with felt tip in half an hour and make them into fly posters, you know, just like, you know, relating to certain issues that come up. So there's that sense that something can be going on in the studio that's slower and more contemplative. But then I like to have the other element that exists back out in the street, which is much more kind of dynamic and sort of rapid production of images as well. Does that answer?
She was so eloquent. A lot of you all kind of don't have any questions now. Is there anything else? Because what I should draw your attention to, for those of you who may not be aware as well, is that Laura's produced a special Walsall edition of her zine, Savage Messiah, which is available free in the gallery. We'll get a bunch out afterwards and make sure that you all get a copy of that. There's also on sale in the shop downstairs her book, Savage Messiah, which is really a kind of collection of some of the zine material developed over the years. And we talked about the writing a little bit more, but do you want to say perhaps a little bit more about the zines and the role that they've played in your practice, and how are they disseminated and distributed?
I've always made zines, again, through my own involvement with punk scenes, and I've always enjoyed the immediacy and the sort of fluidity and dynamism of the zine format, the way that you can just scroll something, photocopy it, staple it together, and that's it. And so ideas are very, you know, it's just a really dynamic, it's got loads of energy and I really like it. I've always been into that, and the same thing with the fly posters. But I started making this particular zine in 2005. And really, I think it did start as a way of drawing the writing and bringing the writing and the drawing together to form this sort of critique of this, as I say, this gentrification process that was going on at such a fast pace at that particular time, you know. Where I live in East London, it was like living in a construction site just for, you know, all the time. And you'd go somewhere one week and then go the next, and then whole streets are gone, and these massive yuppie drones had just suddenly appeared, you know. And there was this sense of wanting to document and chart something quite quickly. And I also make big paintings as well, like really massive canvases. And, you know, again, it's just about this idea of a shift in registers. So the logistics of moving canvases around and showing them, you know, it's much slower, you know, it takes a lot more organisation, obviously. And obviously there's a kind of political idea about space, about where work is shown. So the zine and the fly posters allowed me to return the work to the street and operate outside of a kind of Y Cube gallery system, and, you know, I felt it was very important that those different elements existed simultaneously. But also, as I said before, the writing is a very important part of my practice. I mean, I trained as a painter, but I've never stopped writing. It's always been there. So it was really good for me to actually bring that back and make it a central part of my practice again. So.
And what about distribution of the zines? Obviously here they're available free of charge in the gallery, but when you've produced them elsewhere, how are they disseminated?
It was really in the traditional old sort of 70s punk style of photocopying a few at work, as many as you could get away with, and then just handing them out to people mates, and then they kind of circulate on their own. They get passed around, and so it was very ad hoc. It was not a sort of proper distribution network that I had at all.
But I think that's quite nice, as you've talked in the past about ways where you have been in groups and you've met different people along the route who you've then developed relationships with and got
that's
to know
right.
more, and those people end up with things. So it's a very sort of democratising way, isn't it, of sharing your practice.
That's
and,
true,
and involving people. So they won't get one of these, but they get a nice little booklet.
Yeah,
with
that's
sort
right.
Of,
that, I think that is important to say that through the process of doing the zines, I used to always have launches just in pubs or bookshops around London. And they'd usually just be sort of booze-ups, and then we'd go out on walks. And you'd get, you know, characters coming and people that you've shared an affinity with coming to these events and, you know, offering their own interpretations and ideas and stories about what was going on in London, you know, at that particular point. So, yeah, all these things become interwoven and feed back into the work, yeah. But then when it became a book, it's a, you know, it becomes a different thing again. Then obviously it has a, you know, a proper publisher and a distribution. And
you were a bit concerned about that at the time. When, you know, is it exciting, but also because it became quite a different thing.
It's good though, really,
yeah.
Because the reach is like, you know, it's massive now, and I get people writing to me from all over the place, and you know, it is good to feel like you've got that audience that you can connect with people. Because I was sort of quite aware that often in London, the sort of gallery scene, the art scene, tends to be mostly white, middle class people living in the southeast. So at least having the book has taken it outside of that small milieu, and which is quite important.
Any further questions or comments?
Taking up the comment about your boozing. I'm getting more out of these drawings now after the tour. Do you see that you'll be putting more of yourself and your background into this sort of work? You know, getting more of your feel into the drawing, which I haven't got before, you see.
Oh, really? Yeah.
But I'm getting it now.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, I think the work always is, for me, in the making of it, inextricably tied to my own biography, my own sort of personal recollections and narratives in a place.
Do you think you'll be able to put more into it? Do you think you'll be able to develop more?
Yeah. But at the same time, in the drawings, I feel slightly cautious about making it too specific to one. I sort of want to try and open it up and make it so other people can, it resonates with them, and then they can imbue it with their own memories or their own narratives. Like, for example, if somebody sees that, I would rather put in a sort of flash of fluorescent pink to try and articulate that idea of that moment of euphoria that I experienced in rave culture, rather than actually draw the sound systems and the people and the actual party as it happened. Because I really, for me, that the best thing I could hope for is for other people to look at it and for it to resonate with them, and then they can occupy that territory themselves.
Yeah. Do you leave figures out on purpose?
Sometimes in this kind of work, I think it works best, but in my paintings, that's a different thing, because I do sort of have staged compositions where it becomes more theatrical, and I use figures in landscapes in a slightly different way then. But in these, I think it is quite important to me that they are depopulated so you can step into it.
Can I just ask, as you're actually drawing it and putting it onto there, which bits do you enjoy doing the most? Did you enjoy doing the trees, or did you enjoy doing the water?
That's a brilliant question. I love that question, yeah. Because I actually really get into drawing the surface of concrete. I love it. so much. Like the erosion and the just the sort of dusty chalkiness of the surface of it is amazing. You see these huge structures and they look really, like, got such command, such a presence, and then when you actually walk around them, they become this almost like gold and pink dust, this weird, very strange kind of a melancholy landscape that is a sort of almost like a repository of all these dreams and these memories of a certain place. So all these interwoven kind of fictions as well that emerge in those kind of landscapes. I'm massively into brutalist architecture as well. But at a point of kind of entropy and decay, so rather than being interested in brutalist architecture as it was on the planner's board, I'm more interested in it at a point of sort of socio-political unravelling. So, for example, late 70s, early 80s, and I'm interested in that. I'm interested in it when it has a patina of decay, when it's got graffiti, when it's got kind of... when it becomes marked and weathered, those things are important to me. But also, yeah, like you're saying, when areas become derelict and abandoned, I'm interested in those moments where there's an encroachment, where it feels like sort of nature's asserting itself on that landscape that was heavily planned and, you know, very clearly delineated, very sort of formal architectural structures, then become eroded, and this sense of, you know, that the, I don't know, it becomes porous, it becomes labyrinthine. It's like that, like the labyrinth has reasserted itself over the grid, which, you know, in philosophical terms, I think is the way forward as well.
Anybody else?
Oh, yes. Like myself, you seem to have an objection to the pristine.
Yeah.
Why don't you, or why do you have the slight distaste for the pristine?
I don't know. Like, that's the kind of question a psychiatrist would ask. I'm not sure I should be answering it.
It's a different question.
No, I don't know. Yeah, I think it's about the sort of staining of a place, again, like I said, with time, how places become marked by, you know, the way that we inhabit spaces and use them, and how places become bear witness almost. The fabric of the architecture becomes a form of witness. So the markings... I don't know. I think that must be what it's about for me.
To me, it's because once they start to, I don't know, decay, decline,
yeah,
it's like become more real. They're lived in.
Yeah, that's right, isn't it?
It's
yeah.
No shop window. They're lived in.
Yeah, or in the case of places like this, it's where kind of subversive, unpoliced kind of
yes.
activities.
Reality is rather subversive.
Yeah. Somewhere, I mean, places that exist, like I was saying, outside of the normal mode of, you know, working, consumption, leisure as consumption and all these things, and that one can kind of escape that ceaseless bombardment of those kind of images. And
the graffiti is us fighting back.
Yeah, territorial assertions of a different kind, yeah.
Yeah, I'm interested in what you're saying about your current canvases that you're painting. You said they're a lot more sort of staged.
Yeah.
Could you describe just one of them? I'm interested to see how it compares with this, which seems very sort of anti-establishment, theory of the reviews, essentially. And you're saying that you're actually doing work which is very controlled and therefore more classical in a sense, which I wouldn't expect to do, having seen this.
Well, no, yeah, the paintings I've done are very, they're large canvases, and as I say, yeah, they, I would get people into the studio and sort of get groups of people together and sort of stage these vignettes or these almost like theatrical moments. Last series I did of them was when we were being evicted from an estate I was living in East London, where Peabody was selling off the estate to private developers. So the images were of us on the estate, kind of like a sort of militant group of, we were just there occupying the space, and it became almost like a sort of Ballardian dystopian kind of future with these vignettes. And it was all about us marking a presence or refusing to be pushed out of a place and locating ourselves in a very kind of physical, material sense, you know. So there's some pictures, some images of those paintings on my blog, and my blog address is on that zine that you can pick up as well.
Yes?
Yeah, I mean, I've mentioned Ballard a couple of times just now, but he was hugely influential. That's Bachelard, although I like him as well. But no, Ballard was like a sci-fi writer who was kind of regarded as a bit pulp and a bit kind of trashy, but he was like, but now he's died, obviously. He's had this kind of posthumous recognition as being incredibly important, and he wrote a lot of short stories that really influenced me, that were really a kind of critique of bourgeois norms and attitudes, and it all becomes very very dark and very claustrophobic. One of them he wrote called High Rise. They're all very prescient. He wrote one called High Rise, and really it was like envisaging a kind of future luxury development where it becomes a kind of tripartite situation where all these different people that are living in this block all start feuding, and it ends up being really kind of horrific, like, you know. Anyway, but so that's one person. I mean, Ballard's amazing because of he actually was a visual artist and made installations as well, so you can just read it on that level and allow the images to emerge. It's quite vivid. But obviously, Situationists, Debord was mentioned before, but also Henri Lefebvre, who was linked to the Situationists, but kind of fell out of them like everybody else did. But his theory of moments as well is something that I've referred to quite a lot. But yeah, in the book, in my zines, you'll see that there's all these like shards of political theory that are running all the way through it, you know, and also, people like Bataille have referred to a lot in the work, and Deleuze and Guattari as well. Their ideas about lines of flight and rhizomes, something that I've referred to a lot. And then in terms of like the drift itself, you know, people like De Quincey as well. You know, in terms of like the narcotic wandering through the city. But I suppose most of all, Walter Benjamin, his writings on the cities. I mean, he's amazing. Like, Walter Benjamin, yeah. So, I mean, that's something that I come back to time and time again, as something that's nourished me and inspired me and just left me completely swooning with this, you know, really a sort of desire to write about the city. Yeah.
Any questions? I think at this point, I'm sure Laura will be happy to stay around for a little bit longer, so we'll end the kind of formal session, but you know, if people just want to kind of hang around and chat to Laura for a little while, I'm sure she'll be happy to do that. I will get a big batch of Savage Messiah zines out of the cupboard, so that you make sure that you will get a copy of that. But could we all thank Laura for a really eloquent...